some of this gibberish, and that's putting it mildly, from Leftwich. It's mind-boggling.
Bill Curry Ford presents the sage of Tampa Bay sports himself, Ira Kaufman. So many great offers at BillCurryFord.com. Check them out today for Ira Kaufman listeners and the whole community. Bill Curry Ford, a Tampa tradition for 62 years, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. GM Sean Sullivan, he is waiting to help you personally by phone, email, or at the dealership. Anything you need, Sean's got it, and an extra Ira Kaufman discount. BillCurryFord.com.
The more you see him, the more he plays, the worse it gets.
Buccaneers fans, the Ira Kaufman podcast is back, starring the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the King of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. Yes, he is Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame presenter, and it is that time of year. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee Dekepper of JoeBucksFan is here. If you did not listen to the first podcast of the week, it's there for you at JoeBucksFan.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Addict, where you've got about 1,400-something subscribers, many more. So go back, enjoy that, and catch up. We'll be hitting on a lot of subjects today, Ira, but Monday Night Football against Dallas. And hopefully they get a W and so a miracle happens and they get to stay at home for the next round. Otherwise, who knows where they'll end up going, Sage. But what are your thoughts about Monday night?
Well, I think I speak for the three of us, which is always dangerous. But none of us are surprised one bit that the Bucs got the Monday night game. None of us. It's the standalone game of the weekend. It's the Cowboys. I don't care what their record is. It's America's team. And it's Tom Brady. So those are the principal elements, and I think it's a good matchup, Lee, for the Bucs. I think the only other matchup maybe that would have been better is Seattle. But, of course, they polished off the Cowboys, too, in week one. Lee, the Cowboys are kind of limping in. I asked Derek Brooks, are you worried about the Cowboys' pass rush? Because, to me, that's kind of the strength of the Cowboys. I specifically mentioned Micah Parsons. And this was the quote from Derek Brooks. Very interesting. He goes, yeah, I'm worried about Micah Parsons. If it's third and eight. And he's right. The Bucs don't want to get into long distance, down in distances. So gain 4 yards on a run. What's wrong with that? But you can run at him. He's not very big. And the Cowboys played awful. Just awful. On Sunday. You can argue whether they were motivated or not. Well, the Detroit Lions, Lee, they had nothing to play for. They were eliminated, and they just went into Lambeau against a team that desperately needed a win, and Dan Campbell's team walked away with a win. And the Cowboys were never competitive against the Commanders. So I like this matchup for the Bucs. A lot of people are jumping on the Buck bandwagon, Lee, this week. They are. We're going to talk about this game. Steve's got some specific questions in mind. I'm not happy with the Monday night matchup for one reason, and it's personal. Because it's a late night, and of course, Lee and I will be at the game. And then the Zoom call for the Hall of Fame meeting is the next morning. But I can assure our listeners, Lee, I will be bright-eyed on that Tuesday morning and ready to extol the virtues of Rondé Barber. And may I just say, in passing, the more you look at Rondé Barber's resume, Lee, it is undeniable that he belongs in Kent.
Who was it that said the Bucs can run on Parsons?
Brooks did.
I don't think the Bucs can run on a powder puff team.
You might be right, Lee.
The Bucs hand the ball off more than 15 times. I'm willing to say they lose.
Man, that's harsh. The Bucs are 5-1 when playoff Lenny gets 14 or more carries.
Now, Steve, they ran the ball very well. In the season opener at Dallas. They did.
That's a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
We want them to be able to do everything, and if they can run the ball, they'll be able to eat up more clock and do all the things they want to do, and play action gets better and all that stuff. But it's unreasonable to think that they're going to revive the running game, but we're going to have to see. But I'm glad you brought that up, Ira, because here was an interesting thing in that game. If you caught it from the announcers were being relaying on Sunday, a chat they had with Byron Leftwich. Now, we know that Byron Leftwich last week mysteriously started quoting, oh, you know, everybody's smacking around our offense, but we're the 11th or 12th ranked in the league, which, of course, is just based on yardage. And, of course, it's insane coming from a guy who keeps telling everybody, oh, every time you bring up a stat, oh, that's fantasy football, it doesn't count. Right. So they said on the broadcast, Ira, that Byron Leftwich told them that, you know, hey, this mocking and blasting of the Bucs running game, which is dead last in the NFL, that's overblown because we were never really very good in this offense with the run anyway. So I heard that. I'm like, well, what kind of high bar does this guy set for himself, you know, when he's saying, hey, stop making fun of us because we were only we were bad last year too. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But the couple of facts for you, Ira. Last season, the Bucs ranked 15th in the NFL in yards per carry. This year, they were dead last. Last season, 9th in rushing touchdowns. They ran the ball in the red zone. This year, dead last. Last year, 26th in total yards. This year, dead last. It's a problem, Ira, and I wanted to ask you, as we look back on the season, where do you point the finger? I think fans are pretty split. I'm going to do a poll later this week, whether Fournette or White is their top guy. There's a lot of different feelings out there and very strong feelings on the running backs. We know what happened to the offensive line, but we also have a coaching staff that really isn't scheming the run very well, which is right. They were never very good at that. So where do you point the finger there?
That last thing you said is the most telling, Steve. They don't scheme the run worth a damn. Not worth a damn. Lee, Leonard Fournette didn't forget how to run. I mean, he's a pretty good running back. You know, last year, Steve, am I wrong? I think he averaged 4.5 yards a carry. Am I wrong? That's a nice total. He's not close to that this year. Lee, some of this gibberish, and that's putting it mildly, from Leftwich. It's mind-boggling, Lee. It's mind-boggling.
Oh, he's a disaster behind him.
Lee, how many times has he said, nothing matters except how many points you scored? He says it all the time. So now all of a sudden he's switching it to yardage. I mean, that's when a guy is backed into a corner. Doesn't have anything to say.
What, 13th, you said, Steve? It's not like they're top five. They're average. He's acting like this is a great accomplishment.
Just terrible. As far as the running game, suppose they were terrible in the run game for the last 2 years. Does that mean that Leftwich doesn't have any responsibility to produce an effective run game? Because you've been bad, you're supposed to remain bad?
I mean, I know.
Some of the stuff, Lee, it's beyond belief, some of the stuff he's saying.
Well, I just remember back in 2019 when Jameis was here, and at the time, he loved to run Peyton Barber on first down up the middle for nothing. And I pointed out in one game how many times on first down he ran up the middle. I went through every play on the game book, so whatever game that was. I went through every play, went in with a notebook, had these stats. I recited them to him, and I said, do you think your problem on running on first down might be because you're tipping pitches, the defense expects you to run up the middle? He glared at me and yelled no, and then he turned away from me to get the next question. So he doesn't like facts.
Ira, you know from your insider chatter, and if people only knew the things that the Sage does all week, I think they'd be blown away. A book may be in order, Ira. You may need a book before you leave this planet. But you are very confident, 99% shot, that Byron Leftwich is gone. He doesn't have a chance to redeem himself. He's out of here. And so what I want to ask you, Ira, is with that knowledge and understanding, do you believe that a new offensive coordinator who comes in will be able to hire his own assistants? You know, we've talked about, you know, hey, Todd Bowles didn't get a chance to make assistants changes. It's not the greatest way to go and not the fairest way to evaluate a guy. But most offensive coordinators, when they take a job, they want to hire all of their assistants because they want things coached their way and all that stuff. So you think if the Bucs replace their offensive coordinator, given the staff and Bowles' ties with going back years with guys like Harold Goodwin and all of Bruce Arians' guys, et cetera, do you think they would be willing to bring in an offensive coordinator and fire the whole offensive staff and let him maybe cherry pick a couple of guys he really likes? And how do you think that might go?
I do say Leftwich is gone. I'm not backing off that. My sense is Bowles gets to hire his staff, and I mean the whole staff, and make any changes that he deems necessary. If he likes this guy, he keeps him. If he thinks they can do better, he gets rid of him. I think this is Bowles' chance. Lee, you've mentioned it many times. He was a little hamstrung. Say whatever you want. To me, it doesn't excuse going 8-9 with Tom Brady. But to be fair, the timing, late March, late, everybody's gone. Everybody's gone. They're all under contract if they're worth a damn. And he didn't get that chance. Now, I don't think he's going to make 10 wholesale changes, you know, especially on the defensive side, Lee. But there are guys that I think Bowles would like to hire. And I'm not sure he hasn't reached out to some of them already. Lee?
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah. So I think Bowles will make the calls. I know what Steve's saying about the offensive coordinator sometimes gets to hire their own guys. I think in this case, Bowles will get the chance. And then, Lee, if they're not successful next year, Bowles will probably be gone.
Interesting. And just to give people an idea, and I know once in a while we talk about this, Ira, that there's a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes of NFL teams that sometimes we don't even realize, much less the fans. And again, we have access to, you know, a lot of people at one buck, provided they want to talk. And, you know, I always bring up the fact that I had heard from someone in that building that the Glazers had already started negotiations with Lovie Smith in October of Shannon's final year. That they apparently made the determination in October, we're moving on from Shannon, and he was not released until after the season. And another example, I'm just bringing this up, to, you know, when you said, Ira, that maybe Bowles has already spoken to people. Just FYI, it came out after Cliff Kingsbury was let go by the Cardinals that Michael Bidwell has been researching prospective candidates for quote-unquote weeks.
We can't be naive, and we're not. Not on this podcast, we're not. We're clear-eyed about the Bucs season, how lucky they were to be in this wretched division, and we're not naive about the things that happened behind the scenes. And you're right, Lee. That story is absolutely true. The Glazers didn't wake up on December 28th and decide we're moving on from Greg Schiano. They made that decision much earlier.
You heard November, right?
November sounds right.
I heard October, but either way, middle of the season, they made their decision already.
That's right. And Lee, we got to remember that it was 2013, and Schiano got off to that horrible start. I mean, just horrible.
0-8?
Yeah, so it could have been October. Steve, that wouldn't surprise anybody.
It's always fair to point it out as, sure, these teams start preparing early, but all of a sudden a coach wins 5 of his last 6 and nobody ever reveals that they were shopping for a new coach. So it goes both ways like that. Florida's Elite Restoration Sage, that's who you trust when you have a disaster in your business or your home. Water damage is horrendous, flood, wherever it comes from, mold, fire damage, storm damage. Florida's Elite Restoration, that's your first phone call, 24/7, round the clock. Josh Martin and his team are ready for you, and they'll come out and give a free assessment to determine what you got to do to make your property whole. And they do fantastic work. Perhaps more important, Josh works with insurance companies brilliantly. He's spent 14 years as an insurance adjuster. He knows the games. He knows how they're trying to rip you off, and he's on your side. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Bookmark it. That's where you go and check it out now so you're prepared before you have a disaster. Everybody talks about having a plan. Well, go to Florida'sElitereStoration.com and then you have a plan, and they'll give you a free assessment when you need their services. Also, $500 off, $500 for Ira Kaufman listeners, Joe Bucks fan readers. All you have to do is when you call them, make sure they know where you're from, and that's it. And they will apply that if you move forward following a free assessment of what's going on in your property. They're there 24/7, Florida's Elite Restoration. Use that $500. Don't hesitate. It could be toward your deductible with your insurance, or it could just be cash back. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Ira, let me pinpoint you here. I mentioned Rashad White, Leonard Fournette. Do you think the Bucs continue with this sort of strange-ish rotation that they have, which is Rashad White starts? I think he's made 11 starts this year. And then they switch to Fournette and hope they get something out of that. And then they sort of play the hot hand, but they never really seem to have much of a hot hand too often. Or would you rather see playoff Lenny get his shot? And how would you like to see this go?
You know, Lee, I noticed that Fournette did not get a carry in Atlanta. Now, he didn't play a lot. I thought he caught one ball. He did not get a carry. I thought that was interesting. getting back to Brooks for a second, for whatever reason, and Brooks mentions this all the time, there's something about Rashad White that has gained Brooks's attention in a positive way. He talks about White a lot. He thinks White's going to be a good player. He thinks White is underutilized by Byron Leftwich, even though he doesn't come out and just say it. He wants to see more Rashad White. Now, look, Brooks is not an offensive coordinator or a head coach, but he certainly knows what a football player looks like. And I don't think he was trying to take pot shots at Fournette necessarily, but he wants White to get 15 or 20 carries, Lee. I mean, that's what he wants, especially against a team like Dallas that lives or dies on the pass rush. And he's right. You don't want to be 3rd and 8 consistently with Lawrence and Parsons coming after you. I mean, I think they were 2nd in the league behind Philly in sacks. I mean, that's a fact, although I guess they weren't very good against the Commanders. But I think you got to give the ball to White and see what he can do. But I'm with you guys. There's no reason to think that this Buck rushing game, and Lee, check my memory here, other than the opener against Dallas and Seattle, I don't really remember the Bucks having even a decent running game. Maybe one other time, but those two games stick out as the rare exceptions, Lee. Rare.
Carolina or maybe New Orleans?
They ran the ball reasonably well in Arizona. They ran pretty well in Cleveland. You know, they didn't abandon the run in Cleveland. And
against horrible teams, not playoff teams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the caveat is that, I mean, they did run against Dallas. So what's changed? Who knows? I don't know. I mean, maybe Gedeki, if they like him as a run blocker and they're committed, maybe they stick him back in there. Who knows what they're really going to do, especially if Hainsey has this hamstring issue. You'll see Leverett at center and Gedeki will be back out there at left guard. And his strength is supposedly run blocking. So maybe they go back to whatever was working against Dallas. I don't know, Ira, but
I think White gives them a different dimension, and I prefer Rashad White to get the bulk of the carries in this game. And if they run the ball decently, I think the Bucks will win this game.
Lee, are you in the White camp or the Fournette camp? Where do you lean?
I'm in the Brady camp. I don't want them running the damn ball at all. I mean, I don't get this. I mean, they've got the worst running attack in the league. The only time they seem to have a decent running attack, unless we're going to go back in the Wayback Machine, back 4 months ago, was against Dallas. It was the first game of the year. I don't understand this. I mean, your best player is Brady. He's your best player. He's your middle ticket. If not for Brady, this team's not in the playoffs. I think we can all agree on that. Anybody can agree on that. And this is one or done deal. I don't understand why anyone would want to put the ball in the hands of the worst rushing attack in the league in a playoff game when your quarterback is Tom Brady. I don't understand it. Yeah, I get it. Micah Parsons. Well, you know, Jiminy Christmas makes no sense to me. I mean, they run the ball more than 15 times, this team gets their ass kicked.
Very interestingly,
you only have so many snaps a game. Don't waste them. Put the ball in the hands of the people who are, if you have any kind of an offense, and that's debatable with Leftwich, we've seen it, put the ball in the hands of people that can do damage. And that ain't, at least through 15 weeks of the season, that has not been playoff Lenny and has not been Rashard White. I love them both. I think they might be misused. I think they're in a horrible run offense. But until they get a new offensive coordinator, this is what it is. You know, as Dirk Cutter would say, our people are our people. Brady is the best player on this, at least on offense. Put the ball in his hands. I don't care if he throws it 40 times. I don't think this team can or will win running the ball. I just don't.
Very interestingly. And Steve, let me throw this in there before I get back to you. Steve, I don't like to quibble, but I will quibble with our esteemed colleague here. Steve, I will quibble. Lee, I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think it's true. Brady's not the best player on this offense. He's the most important player. The best player is
Christian Wirfs.
Tristan Wirfs is the best player.
I don't disagree, but Tristan Wirfs, you hope he doesn't have the ball in his hands because that means somebody fumbled.
Ira, real quick, flash answer here. Who has more touchdown passes this year, Tom Brady, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence?
The way you ask it makes it sound like it's Trevor Lawrence, but I got to think Herbert's also got more touchdowns than Brady.
They all have the same. 25 touchdowns. Wow. So, you know, the perception that Brady can't find the end zone, it doesn't fly when you look at relative across the league. It flies when you look at what he did last year and the year before. Right. But right. I think it's just important to note, it's a neat little nugget. I think most people wouldn't answer that correctly, that Tom Brady on this anemic Bucs offense is tied for eighth in the NFL in touchdown passes thrown. So,
but Steve, you do have to add, to be fair, he throws the ball more than anybody else.
All right. I'm glad you asked. How many more attempts per game does Brady have than Herbert?
Five.
Well, Brady averages 43. I would say five.
Two. Two more per game.
Really?
Yeah. Two more per game. So it's interesting, Ira. You know, our perspective has been off because of the last 2 years. As far as the run game, I mean, I just look at it, Lee, guys. They have to run a little bit. So, I mean, I want the best guy out there running. And if it is successful, it's successful. But what about in the passing game? Let's say they do go a little five wide, Ira, or they decide to play more hurry up, or they decide and with Brady that say, hey, you know what? We're going to throw 50 passes, and we don't always plan to do it. We don't want to do it, but we end up doing it. So let's just go ahead and do it. If they go pass heavy, Ira, who do you want in that backfield? Rashad White, who seems a little bit better with the yak, or Lenny, who, you know, can punish a defense a little bit and has been known to yak a little bit himself?
I think Fournette gets my nod there. I think he's very reliable. Very reliable as a receiver out of the backfield. He caught a lot of balls this year, Steve. A lot of balls. Proved in Jacksonville. And he proved during the stretch drive of the Super Bowl season. Especially in the postseason, Steve, his numbers are remarkable as a receiver. He's something like, you know, 28 targets and 27 catches. I mean, something crazy. And Lee, remember early with Brady? Early. Those first couple of games, he was dropping some balls. He was tipping some up in the air. He doesn't do that anymore. He's very sure-handed, Fournette. You're right. He doesn't have the wiggle that White has maybe after catching the ball. But Lee, for me, as far as the target out of the backfield, I'm going with Fournette.
I'm going to ask you this, Ira. I think I know the answer. I'm going to guess what your answer is in my head. And if you answer the way I think you're going to, I would agree with you. And I know Todd Bowles kind of treated the last game sort of like a preseason game, sort of. This Devin Tompkins, that's the first time he got a lot of snaps on offense. It sort of reminded me of, or sort of looked like, he was the Scotty Miller of the last game of the season. That they asked him to do a lot of stuff that they asked Scotty Miller to do throughout the season. He almost looked like as good, maybe a little bit better than Scotty Miller. Am I crazy for saying that? And would you expect to see Tompkins get some touches in a playoff game to be, you know, the Scotty Miller kind of guy?
I like what I see, Lee. I like what I see. I haven't seen a lot. What I've seen, I like. He's got a chance. They got to develop him. They got to develop him. He's raw. But the kid looks like he might be able to make some plays. Lee, I've seen Scotty Miller for the last 2 years. I haven't seen much. I mean, let's be honest.
He's still living on that that touchdown in Green Bay, hasn't he?
He sure is, Lee. He sure is.
I know you don't like to quibble, Ira, but I do like to quibble. I don't know. I don't know what planet I'm on right now. Devin Tompkins, I mean, the guy looks like a JV player who's way overmatched, too small, and just not good enough. Four catches on nine targets for 25 yards, and I can't celebrate that guy. He dropped a touchdown pass. I mean, he looked like just a green-as-grass rookie out there. I mean, we saw a couple years ago, we saw Cyril Grayson, you know, a ball went off his helmet. He got a shot a year later, did a few nice things. He got hurt in training camp. Now he's not even on an NFL team, even though he's been healthy for a couple of months and trying to get in the league. I don't see Tompkins as anything more than just a camp meet guy.
Well, I don't see him playing a pivotal role, you know, on Monday night. I'm not going that far. Lee, I'm not closing the books on Tompkins. I'm not doing that. Give him a training camp and let's see what we got. But, Lee, as far as being a returner, he's not bad. He's not bad.
He's much better than Darden, and Darden got how many chances to do something and he didn't?
Yeah. I tell you who I think's going to have another very good game is Godwin. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Lee, we just can't talk about this guy enough. You know, I believe since the opener, he's got at least five catches in every game. Five.
Yes.
I think that might be the tops in the NFL, Steve, in terms of a streak. I think it is right now. Currently. 100 catches? I mean, 100 catches for a guy coming off that kind of an injury? What a remarkable player this guy is.
We hit him in the last podcast, Ira. Just a reminder for everybody who might have missed it. It's out there at joebucksfan.com, Apple Podcasts. Yes, Godwin is exceptional, Sage, and what you should do, you should buy him a Big Storm beer. Big Storm beer, that's Florida's best craft beer. Big Storm Brewing Company. Big Storm beer is in the stores, it's in restaurants, and it's at their tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, Cape Coral, and Orlando at the Amway Center. Follow each individual location on your various social media, Instagram, Facebook, Big Storm Brewing Company. We love Big Storm, the Bromosa, their Tangerine IPA, that's the top seller. Wavemaker Amber Ale, the original, it's fantastic. Of course, it's a dark beer, and you've got Sunny Key Lime, you've got so many specialty beers, Dunder and Blixum, their spiced ale, which is available this time of year. There are many, many more. BigStormBrewery.com. BigStormBrewery.com. Stock up for the tailgate for this weekend. Great time ahead if you've got Big Storm beer. BigStormBrewery.com.
Well, Ira, you bring up injuries. I got to ask you about this. Todd Bowles was asked about, again, Brian Jensen's injury. And I think it's warranted, the questions, given that we don't know what's going on with Hainsey. What do you make of Bowles dancing around? Every time he's asked about Jensen, he dances. You know, what's wrong with his knee? Oh, there's swelling. And he's never come clean about what's wrong with the knee. Now, you know, he's entering his third week of a 21-day window to activate him. And they asked Bowles, what's going on with Ryan Jensen? Oh, status quo. Well, to me, status quo would be he would still be in street clothes watching practice.
I'm with you, Lee. I'm skeptical. I'm doubtful.
Doubtful as in he'll play, or doubtful that Bowles is being as leveling with people?
I'm doubtful that he'll play. I think the word around One Buck Place is it's unlikely. They were hoping for a miracle, Lee, and you never know with treatment exactly when a guy is going to be cleared or whatever. Reading the body language, Lee, from the podium, it doesn't sound promising for Jensen. I'm sorry to say it.
Todd Bowles has body language?
they really might need him, you know, depending on the severity of this Hainsey hamstring injury. You could say you lever it and move out of left guard. You know, Lee, the problem with that is Leverett was starting to play well at left guard.
Yeah.
And now you got to, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right, Lee? So in my mind, Hainsey's going back to the bench next year. He's not going to be the center. I like him as the swing guy with his versatility. But Hainsey's not going to be my starting center next year. Just not.
Steve, I think we found Ira's secret calling. He can read body language from a statue.
It's,
I love Todd Bowles. You know, Todd listens to this. I know periodically he does. I'm fooling with Todd. I'm joking around. But he is Mr. Stoic on that podium, and I didn't know he had any body language. Now, away from that podium, yeah, he's got – yeah, he jokes around with us, and we here's body language. But once he's behind that podium and the cameras are rolling, wow, he's a poker player up on that podium.
Hey, Steve, I want to run something past you guys and just talk about this for a couple of minutes. I know it's a little premature, but I think it's a very interesting, intriguing angle. Lee, I'm going to start with you.
Hold on, Sage. I got to close out my screen here real quick. I'm at BillCurryFord.com. They've got 3.9% APR financing for up to 60 months on top Ford models here, so I'm going crazy. I need a new ride. It's about time. I got my last used vehicle at Bill Curry Ford. This is a great time to do it. BillCurryFord.com. All right, go ahead, Ira.
Lee, do you think the results of this particular matchup, how they play, whether they win, how they play, will have any bearing in a scenario where Brady moves on or retires, and how the Glazers look at this roster in terms of, hey, we still have enough pieces to make a run. Let's get a guy like Derek Carr or Garoppolo. Or if they lose by 14 points to Dallas and Brady leaves, the Glazers relent and say, let's go with Trask and see what's going on.
If the Glazers do decide that, that tells me for the people, for the crowd out there that wears orange and blue pajamas, and, you know, they have life-size blow-up dolls of Tim Tebow wearing a 15 jersey. You might want to put your fingers in your ears when I say this. If they decide it's time for Kyle Trask, that tells me they're looking to draft a quarterback next year. Not this year, next year.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Steve, I guess what I'm saying, Steve, is an 8-9 finish. Steve, tell me if this is too strong. An 8-9 finish with Brady taking every snap raises some questions about this overall roster. Am I wrong, Steve?
I don't know, Ira. I mean, every team questions its roster every year. The Bucs have had significant injuries. And I think that if you put the consensus of what we've talked about for the whole season and just the general fan consensus is that it's coaching versus personnel. I believe that. And so it's hard for me to say otherwise, but sure. I mean, you always have to evaluate what you have and what you don't. Jason Light hasn't exactly struck gold with all of his free agents and draft picks. Usually you need a massive impact from a rookie or two in order to have a great season. And, you know, so there's a lot to evaluate. But to your broader question, whether it affects Tom Brady, is what you're saying? His decision?
No, does it affect the way the Glazers look at the future of this franchise?
Yeah, absolutely. Except the way the roster's built, Ira, as far as financially speaking, it's built for one more year. All right, they've got Leonard Fournette is under contract, too expensive to cut. Carlton Davis under contract. You've got Jensen under contract in full for next year.
Donovan Smith's under contract.
So you've got a lot of guys. Godwin has one more season left on his contract. Mike Evans as well. There's a lot of guys here. Devin White is entering the fifth year of his, the option year. So he is under contract, and you've got a lot of guys. You got a lot of guys. So, you know, what they do, I think, will be affected by that. It's a tough time to blow it up unless they think they can get a lot on the trade market for some of these guys. I mean, if you really want to blow it up, then you have to make some really difficult decisions and maybe get rid of a cornerstone player who's going to fetch quite a bit for you. I don't know. I'm not that down on Kyle Trask at all because I haven't seen him play. It still comes back to that. He's got a live arm and has been well coached here, you would think. So I don't know what he's going to look like, but, you know, obviously most quarterbacks in his situation don't come in and thrive.
One more quick one for Lee. Quick. Lee, the same thing. Do you think the results of this particular game, whether they win or lose, will have any bearing on whether Brady wants to come back to the Buccaneers?
All depends what negotiations with the Glazers are. And that we don't know. You know, I don't know if he likes Bowles or not. I don't know if he likes Leftwich or not. He likes to bro hug him on the sidelines, but does that mean he likes him? I don't know. It's always about finances with Brady. Finances and winning. If he thinks that the Glazers promise him that they could finagle the salary cap enough to get a player or two, and of course there's a financial benefit, whatever that may be, whether it be stock options or who knows, that'll be a factor as well. It will be a factor. Will it be a major factor? Again, I can't say yay or nay because I don't know what Brady has spoken with the Glazers. I don't even know if Brady wants to play next year. Everybody thinks he does. And the speed bump and him returning to football is no longer there. That's his ex-wife. That's gone. No one's going to stop him from playing football if he wants to. But there's too many variables to even guess what Brady's going to do.
Steve, I guess what I'm saying is if they're one and done, and they're an 8-10 football team in Brady's mind, couldn't he say, I'm out of here?
I think it matters wholeheartedly, but it really comes down to what the game looks like. I mean, maybe the offensive line steps up, has a great game, and Brady isn't on it, and they lose, 27-24. And he can look around and say, it was on me. I mean, that might mean a lot to him. It might change his perspective. Of course, they could win the game, which could change his perspective quite a bit. And I think it just depends what it looks like. I mean, Brady wants to win. I think it is more about the winning to him than the money because he's basically a walking ATM machine. You know, he took less from the Bucs than he could have. He could get money wherever he needs it. But I think he is interested in the Glazers connections and what they can do for him, just like he would any other owner. But I think it matters, Ira, and because he's going to hear it from the organization and his teammates after the game if they were to lose. And, you know, their sales pitch gets a lot stronger if everybody plays well around Brady. You know, he's very smart football-wise. He's going to know if Todd Bowles shows up with a money defense here, and the Bucs lose 10-9, you know, Brady might look at himself and be like, you know what, I know how important it is to have a good defense around me. I don't know. It's tough to pin down, Ira.
Absolutely.
All right, hey, Sage, Russell Gage, tough question in some ways because I'm going to read you some numbers here that are interesting. Russell Gage, you know, came here, $10 million free agent. He's got multiple years on his deal as well, and I have to assume that Tom Brady had a hand in picking him, right? I don't think they would have signed Russell Gage.
Big hand.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Russell Gage caught 73% of the passes thrown to him this year, Ira. That's a career high for him, busting the 70% he had with Atlanta last season.
That's a good number.
And a very, very strong number across the league. He had 5 touchdowns. That's second best in the NFL. Excuse me, second best on the Buccaneers this season, which that's not a good sign, but it's still a good number no matter how you cut it. 5 touchdowns.
I think he's got 4 in the last 5 games, Steve, I believe.
Yeah, it's a career high for him and second best on the team. 51 catches, 426 yards. Now, the yard total is not what you want at all. That's not what they're paying for. They were looking for Yak, but he's been hurt. But every receiver on the team, their yardage total is down a few yards. Like you mentioned Chris Godwin, you know, 10 yards a catch. He's usually 2 to 3 more yards than that. Mike Evans all the way down. So Gage has been underwhelming, but they're sort of, in some ways, they kind of got their money's worth within the offense and within the scope of the stats, which, you know, these aren't, I'm not using some sort of wacky stats. I mean, 73% of the ball is coming your way. That's what it is. I don't know. What's your take on Gage, Ira?
My perception has changed, Lee, in the last month. He's reaching the end zone. Brady likes him. Brady trusts him. I'll say this, Lee. If Brady moves on or retires, I'm not sure Gage is back here next year. I'll say that. And I think the opposite is true. You're right, Lee. Brady was the critical factor in targeting Russell Gage in free agency. Lee, the guy knows how to get open. Now, his yardage total, I think it's disappointing. I'd like to see him up to about 700 yards. But he's not there. He's had his share of injuries this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he scores another touchdown Monday night. Wouldn't shock anybody. I've grown to respect this guy a little bit. He didn't let the bad start get him down. Got himself a little healthier. Right now, Lee, I think he's pretty effective.
In my eyes, and this got people hacked off on Twitter, I'll argue all night long about this. Major disappointment. Major. $10 million a year. He was brought in to be a significant player, a significant impact, not a little bit of an impact here or there, or 2 or 3 clutch catches. He was brought in to be a major impact, and he has not been. He's been a distant number 3 wide receiver. You know, people whined that Julio Jones had no impact. Gage had even less of an impact, I think. That doesn't mean if he could stay healthy that he will improve next year. I'm not saying he can't. But this year, major disappointment.
I think he's been considerably more effective than Julio Jones, Lee. I think.
Well, I can just go by from what I remember, which I don't remember well at all, and from what my eyeballs say. And I didn't see Russell Gage being remotely close to a threat that Julio Jones was. Now, I'm not saying Julio Jones was effective. I'm not saying Julio Jones was great. But I sure saw Julio Jones on the field more than Gage. My eyes saw Brady trying to hit Julio Jones on big plays more than Russell Gage.
His numbers are disappointing, Lee. I won't argue now. Look, Lee, when he came in, you know, we didn't know about Godwin. But, you know, let's be honest. He's no Godwin and he's no Evans. You know, to be fair, Steve, my only point is simple. He finished strong heading into the postseason. We'll see what he does Monday night.
Yeah, it's interesting because you could have found a guy for a lot less money to do what Gage has done, you know, and that's obviously part of the whole equation here. What have you invested? It's tricky with him. He's still a young player, which is why they gave him the multiple years. So it'll be interesting going forward, Ira. Look, just going a little bit, another step on the offense, Sage. Lee was very impressed with Blaine Gabbert the other day. I know Blaine Gabbert's a touchy subject for you, Ira, so I had to bring it up. His opening pass right off the bench to Devin Tompkins, a strike, should have been a touchdown. I was very impressed with that. Not every guy comes in hot like that. But, you know, I didn't think he did anything special. It didn't look too special to me. But what did it look like to you, Ira?
You know, at times he throws a nice ball. I mean, I will say that. He throws a nice ball, nice tight spiral. But you know, I'm right about this. The history of Blaine Gabbert in this league. The more you see him, the more he plays, the worse it gets. And there's a lot of guys like that. You know, that's the definition of a backup quarterback, Lee. That is the definition. That's the definition of Mike Glennon. That's the definition of Ryan Fitzpatrick. The more he plays, the more snaps, the more he gets exposed. Now, we haven't seen that with Blaine Gabbert in Tampa, because he doesn't play. But I'm sure we would if Brady left and they replaced him with Gabbert, and Gabbert, you know, throws 555 balls next year. You're going to see the old Blaine Gabbert. And you're going to see the 13-35 career Blaine Gabbert. And Steve's right. You know my feelings. They're well documented, Lee. He's a backup, and that's all I'm going to say. He's a backup.
Well, since we talk about quarterbacks, Ira, I want your feedback. Apparently, Bruce Arians said recently that if not for Tom Brady, they were going with Jameis in 2020.
I think that's nonsense. I think it's nonsense. He reverted. He regressed. Two games that Arians really wanted to win. He really wanted to finish at 9-7 instead of 7-9. But that's not what happened. I think it's easy for Arians to say that now. I don't really think it's true. They didn't get Brady. I think they would have got somebody else. Luckily enough, they got Brady. There were other guys that were available. I didn't see any way Winston was coming back, Lee.
All right, Sage, we're going to get more into the defense in the next podcast and fired up into these picks. We'll see what sort of nonsense and silliness comes out of Dallas as they melt down over there at the thought of this game and their bumbling offense all of a sudden.
Can you imagine, Steve, all the stupid interviews that Jerry Jones is going to do this week? And all that's going to do is add more and more pressure.
Yeah, and you've said it a bunch of times already. You know, Dallas has all the pressure on them, which, you know, is very much true. However, I got to ask you this, Ira, because this is an important question, and I want to remind everybody, as we heard earlier, Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Sean Sullivan, the GM, he's there for you. He's waiting for you online, in person, at the dealership. He's going to help you personally. He's going to treat you like Ira's brother, Barry. He's going to put his arm around you virtually maybe and say, what do you need? What are you looking at? I'll help you. You need body work. You want to buy a vehicle for your kid in April. We'll figure it out. That's how he is. And he's got that Ira Kaufman discount for you. And we thank Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. And like we heard from the Mold Kings, the legends of disaster, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Check them out now before you have your disaster so you know where to go and who to call 24/7, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Ira, I took a look this morning and thousands of Buccaneers season ticket holders are putting their tickets up for sale. I don't blame these people on the verified resale sites and stuff, but they're looking to cash in, right? It's a nice way to make some money. And you got a huge demand from Dallas. And of course, many Bucs season ticket holders will not exercise their option to take playoff tickets. So that frees up more individual seats. And the Bucs are doing a thing. They're trying to, you know, lock out tickets temporarily to give season pass members a chance to buy even more to try to keep it as pewter and red as possible. But the reality is you were there in January of 2008. I was there in January of 2008 when the Giants came to town and there was a sea of blue to the tune of 20,000. And I think you're looking at Tom Brady having to go to silent counts because of all the Dallas fans. And frankly, and I hate to say it, but that might be something that affects Tom Brady and his thought process, because I assure you that's something he never dealt with in New England.
You know, Lee, it is what it is. In the words of Lee DeKemper, off all the president's men, follow the money, Lee. Follow the money. You can never be wrong. And, Lee, we can't slam. You know, it's easy for us. We don't pay for the tickets in the press box, Lee. We're in our ivory towers, to be fair. And somebody that's, you know, got a season pass and doesn't want to go out, and, you know, and get home at 1 o'clock in the morning and deal with all the traffic, and Lee has a chance to sell their tickets and pay for the entire season pass. Lee, I mean, can we really crucify these people? Can we?
I can't.
It's an individual decision. But to Steve's point, and I mentioned it to Derek Brooks today. Derek, are we going to see a sea of Cowboy faces? And Derek Brooks says, yes, we are, Ira. Yes, we are.
I've never felt that I'm in any position to tell anyone how to legally spend their money. And this is sort of an irritant for me. You know, I'll see people that are paid to go to Rays games or paid to go to Hurricanes football games down in Miami. And they take a picture of the empty seats and they put it up on Twitter. And you could tell they're trying to mock them. I'm like, well, if it bothers you that much, why the hell don't you buy freaking season tickets and sit out there? You know, like someone said, Miami was playing some no-name directional school, and it was like 95 degrees out, and sun was roasting, and like, nobody's there. I said, okay, you go out and sit in that seat, see if you want to do it, to watch a 40-point game. Give me a break. You wouldn't buy a ticket, so why would you expect other people to buy a ticket? That just rubs me the wrong way. That's very arrogant. It's very snobbish, and that's just not me. Do I wish it would be 100% red? Absolutely. But I'm in no position to tell people how to spend their money. You know, every once in a while we'll see someone on Twitter, they're like complaining because, you know, let's say they'll see too many Cowboys fans. Where are you? If it bothers you so much, why don't you get off your ass and buy a ticket? Where are you?
Steve, we're going to be reminded again that this is not New York or Chicago, and it's not. Or Green Bay. It's not.
Thank goodness.
Well said, Steve.
Last question for you, Sage, as we wrap it up, and we'll be back for another podcast this week. I got to ask you this, because I know Bucks fans are staring at it. They're staring at it. They're staring at it. They're wondering, and they would love to ask the Sage, so I'm going to ask it. Ira, I think most Bucks fans would like the positioning to hold so they can go play Philadelphia, who's got some health issues and isn't the same team it was earlier in the year in the second round if they were to beat Dallas. But as you know, the NFL reseeds after each round. So that means if Seattle knocks off the 49ers, division game there, a third game of the year, Seattle would go to Philadelphia and the Bucks would be stuck going to San Francisco, which would be a freaking nightmare, in my opinion. Or the Giants going to Minnesota. If the 49ers win and the Giants win, then the Giants would head out to Philadelphia and the Bucks would be stuck going to San Francisco. Do you think there's any chance that the Seahawks or the Giants can win and sort of mess this up for the Bucks, having to go back to that hellhole that where they got destroyed in San Francisco?
Lee, I think the Giants are a lively underdog. Why not? They played a couple of weeks ago. It was a fantastic game. And I believe the Vikings won on a 61-yard field goal. Lee, Minnesota's been, a tricky team. They find ways to win, but they're always, you know, three-point wins. That's the story of the Vikings. And somehow, you know, they got that number three seed. I don't think the Giants are going to be scared going into Minnesota. Now, look, it's a noisy dome, Lee. It is. But I don't think Seattle's got a snowball's chance in San Francisco. I don't know what you think, Lee. I mean, I don't think they got a chance. You know, that's 27-10 written all over it. So I think the Niners are going to stay as the two seed. But I think Minnesota's vulnerable. And like Steve said, if the Giants should pull a little surprise, the Giants would go to Philly and the Bucks would go to San Fran. Lee, I'd rather go to Philly at this point if I'm the Bucks than San Fran.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was there. I witnessed what the 49ers did to the Bucks. They beat the hell out of them. Physically beat the hell out of them.
Jalen Hurts is hurt. Steve, he's playing, but he's hurt. I know he's got an extra week off now, but
What about Lane Johnson?
Lane Johnson is a maybe for the postseason. He's a maybe.
That's big.
Well, the Niners have won 10 in a row, and that's the team to stay away from. And I'll give you some credit, Ira. You've been on for weeks and months on your weekly spot on SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio with Chris Russo. Or before the season started, the 49ers were your pick to go to the Super Bowl. Of course, we're rooting against you, but it seems like an incredibly sound pick right now. Yeah, we hope you're wrong, but nice job there, Ira.
Steve, I didn't know they'd be doing it with a seventh-round draft pick. I'll tell you that.
Hey, come on, this age knows everything. What are you talking about? And could you call John Lynch and get some dirt for us on this Brady situation, where he thinks he's going, what's going on there? Come on, get it done, Ira.
I'm on it.